What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
It's like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant. For a lot of people, Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Ready for your next big move? The trip from the fridge to the couch. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
Well, Euros is in the air. We're into day four. It's been eventful thus far, to say the least. Tom McDonald of the Irish Independent is with us. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. And enjoying the Euros so far. As I think you've been saying across the evening, I think it started okay, hasn't it?
Yeah, very well, I think. So just for people tuning in, Sweden, Spain, second half getting underway. Spain, tiki-taka's back. They have kept the ball like nobody's business, Spain. Sweden generally defending very deep, not letting them have it, but almost powerless to stop them, not trying to press them bar one or two rare occasions. Sweden did have one really good chance, but Spain have had a multitude. Morata missed a one-on-one he should have scored. There were a couple of others, but from a Spanish perspective, Dan, you would say, given all the turmoil pre-tournament, the COVID situation, which was genuinely very messy, they've pitched up in reasonable shape here this evening?
Yeah, they started okay, yeah. No, you have to factor in, I suppose we don't know the extent to which that was a disturbance, but clearly, you know, it would have to be really, you know, with some of the, you know, the instability and the, you know, the friendly where they had to sort of play their 21s effectively and all of that stuff going on. They've been decent. It's funny you say about, like, the tiki-taka is back or whatever. I mean, I think we spoke about maybe on Saturday, like, I mean, Spain, you know, were knocked out of the World Cup in 2018, you know, after sort of passing Russia to death, but not really actually, more sort of passing around them and not really hurting them. And Russia being happy enough, and then, okay, they got a couple of questionable referee decisions. But I think, like, some teams are pretty happy to do this against Spain sometimes, what Sweden are doing. You know, they've been very defensive, but sort of saying, come and hurt us and see what you can do. Like, we'll let you have the ball and then see what happens. And as you mentioned, like, Morata had that amazing chance, but and there was a couple of moments in the early stages. But these first games are funny, you know. Like, there's definitely a danger of, like, reading far too much into them. But, of course, you know, particularly when in international football, as much as you can do your homework, like, and you can watch more games now with the fact that it's spread out, you're probably not watching these teams in the same detail as you you might a club side, and you can sort of form opinions on the basis of the first game very strongly, and you know, Chris and a team is back or whatever, but they've started okay. They've definitely started okay.
Well, way to ruin my Italy are going to win the Euro segment, Dan. That's scratched. That's gone.
Italy, but who? I mean, there's other teams.
I'm joking. They've
been your most impressive team so far, then.
No, yeah? I'm just joking. Although they have caught me most by surprise. I suppose I hadn't read too much into the 26-game winning run. Not really sure why. I just had this sense Italy, not in a great place, but they pitched up very well on Friday night. We'll get to all that. So, I mean, it has been a really interesting tournament on the football side of things. Obviously, the defining memory of the weekend, which will stretch for decades as opposed to the games themselves, was the Christian Eriksen situation, which was just a horrific, unforgettable, chilling kind of a moment. I was saying to the fellas on the news round that I was driving home. I was thinking, well, I'll get home for the evening game, and there were some GAA matches I needed to watch, and it was definitely an evening of double screening ahead. And then a friend rang me, I was in the car, rang me, who was obviously watching the Denmark game, and told me what was happening, just to see was I watching it as well. And I promptly turned on TalkSport, where David Connolly was on COCOM, actually. I'm not sure the commentator's name, but David Connolly was alongside him. And it was quite chilling to listen to the way they were describing things in the car. And then they went back to the studio afterwards, because there's only so long you can keep talking about this, you know. And genuinely, the way the studio were talking, it was as if Eriksen had died. You know, that was my sense in the car, that Christian Eriksen had died, and they were, say, you know, hoping against hope, and, you know, Mwamba's heart had stopped for 78 minutes, so maybe there's a chance. And they clearly hadn't seen the photo of Eriksen having regained consciousness leaving the pitch. So they were talking about the white sheets which went up and the players standing around, images I saw later on, you know. But even it was kind of, it's funny, your brain does makes different connections which aren't necessarily correct, in that when they talked about like the white screens going up, I immediately thought of horse racing, and those screens go up in horse racing for only one reason. Now, in Eriksen's case, it wasn't the reason they go up in racing. It was just for privacy, as much as it was to help do what the players were already doing with their bodies. But this was, you know, this, all of these images in your head. And then I guess I watched it back afterwards, and there was something just so frightening about the way the ball bounced off his knee when he was already out of control of his body and collapses and open-eyed. And, you know, I'm actually kind of pleased I only saw the images after I knew he was okay, because I don't know what your experience of it was, but to see him collapse and his eyes open and look effectively lifeless would have been very strange to kind of digest in real time. It was weird enough to listen to the radio commentary, let alone almost look at it.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I mean, it was definitely haunting. I mean, it was bizarre. I was on the couch watching the game, but as you do now, you're sort of fast forwarding and sort of rewinding a bit. And I sort of just looked away, and, you know, they were talking about a player being down injured, and I actually rewinded back, presuming that it was like a bad tackle or like, you know, one of these ones where someone's gone over with a cruciate type injury or something. And yeah, I mean, instantly regretted it the minute I see rewinded back and watched it. And yeah, it's a strange one, because obviously there's a broader debate around like the coverage and what was appropriate and what was not. And like, there's definitely layers to that debate. And yet at the same time, you hold a particular view, but then you find yourself watching it, you know?
Isn't that the thing that we all have the option of flicking away? That's the problem.
Now, everyone had this option to switch off. And I just actually couldn't believe what was happening, that you were seeing some of it. Like, you know, it brought home the seriousness of it when you actually saw the, you know, the compressions as such, you know, that this was actually happening. And I know you're right. Like, of course, you could have turned it off. And and it's strange. It's funny you talk about the talk sport thing as well. Like, it's funny, actually, with the racing thing, I mean, funny enough, in racing now, they probably put those screens around jockeys too. It is a privacy thing to some degree. They've actually increasingly in recent years just doing it more. Then maybe they would have at a different time. I flicked on to Sky Sports News at one point then, when all the stations had cut their broadcast, and I don't know who the Sky Sports presenter was, but said something along the lines of, you know, we hope we're not going to bring you the news that we expect to be bringing you. It was sort of like unbelievable phrase. And again, listen, people are under pressure and not just, you know, able to articulate it. But you find yourself, you know, preparing yourself for the worst, I have to say. And I would have been in touch with a couple of people, and, like, you know, I would have known someone who would have, like, collapsed playing football and passed away. And, I mean, it's Carl O'Malley, a journalist who passed away a couple of years back playing Astro, who would be very well known to sort of a lot of people in my world. And I would have been pally with Carl, and certainly, you know, there would have been a few messages could have gone back and forth, and people would have known that. And instantly it sort of brought that back and made it feel very real, particularly just the description of, like, the you know, that stumble and that sort of haunting feeling, you know. And it really does just, like, bring it home, because obviously in that case it was someone with sort of a young family, and then you're just sort of, you know, you couldn't help but being a bit distressed and quite emotional about the whole thing, really, that, like, you're there, and yet you're just sitting on your couch, like, watching it, you know. Like, and there's a guilt actually that kicks in for, well, I'm just sitting here watching this, you know, and, like, this is someone's life playing out in front of us here. And yet there's a part of you, the news person, that's sort of flicking around for updates and stuff. It was strange, you know. And
I think television had that dilemma as well. Like, there is a duty to show what's happening. There is a duty to cover an event. And yet at the same time, and I guess I want to ask you about this, because you watched it in full. I haven't watched it in real time. I haven't gone back to watch the 15 minutes or however long it was that they stayed on the pictures before coming back to studio. I've just, you know, I've seen videos on kind of Twitter and that kind of stuff. But there is like this duty to cover what's happening. It does seem like some of the pictures were intrusive, like maybe that's the thing to do. Like BBC's logic, BBC's official line is, well, we don't pull away until the game has been suspended. You know, so if the game is still on, then we are duty bound to cover the game. And obviously they don't have control over the images. So they're at the behest and the whims of the director, who has since come out and defended himself in L'Équipe and said there was nothing salacious about what he was doing and it was all done in good faith and tried to be as tactful as possible while still covering it. Now, there's definitely an argument that at a certain point, those pictures should have just gone to that wide picture of the full pitch and you could see the ring of bodies in the far corner and not much more besides. That might have been better, and maybe a few cutaways of fans upset or whatever, or maybe the manager on the sideline, but no need to go in around, I guess, effectively what was a man dying, because that's what we all thought was happening. So could you give me a sense of the pictures, like how intrusive was it? I know his partner Sabrina came on the pitch and she was like inconsolable and panicked and horrified, as you can imagine. So I've heard like it was crazy they cut to her. So for instance, on her, how salacious were the shots of her being upset? Like did they keep going to her and like zoom in on her, and like were they zooming in on Ericsson's legs, and were they trying to get every bit of almost information possible, or how tasteful or otherwise was it, Dan?
Well, in what I saw, it was like, I'd love to know sort of how it all played out, because like I must say a very strange aspect to this as well, which wouldn't have been the case in other Euros, but like a lot of the people who were commentating were doing it off tube, as in they weren't in the stadium because of COVID. So like that was a bit, so normally like in those situations, the commentator or the co-commentator that's there, they're seeing stuff happening in front of you and they're able to tell you what's happening, even if you're not seeing it on screen. But so a lot of the coverage that we saw here anyway was actually reliant entirely on that feed to be able to even describe what was happening. And I don't know if there was an awareness that actually there was very few, you know, commentators and people there on site in terms of being able to tell the story in the way that you could sensitively if you were there. That's just a by-the-by, but that certainly added a strangeness to the whole thing, that actually they were reliant on the pictures, I think, in some cases, just to be able to say what was actually happening.
Yeah.
And certainly, like, there was an initial incident where they were showing the players around and you could see, you know, the CPR being adopted, or you could see his legs going a bit. And I just, you know, I was just instantly going, whoa, like this is really happening here, you know.
And you could did they stay in that long, like the image of the legs going?
No, they flicked away from it pretty quickly. And a part of me just thought, well, maybe that they just weren't expecting, you know, they weren't actually expecting this. But then they did go back to it again, which again is probably then less forgivable. I think the first time I could think, well, you know, you're trying to do convey what's happening. But then when you saw the seriousness of that, it was like, well, I mean, listen, maybe to other people it was pretty obvious what was happening all along, but certainly from my perspective, the side of the pitch thing, I mean, I didn't know it was his wife. You were led to, like, because the commentators weren't in a position to say who it even was, because they didn't know, you know. But the assumption was that's who it was. And again, they were going to shots of, like, people on the sideline watching on, and this was a sideline thing that happened. Can you believe it was an innocent mistake, that she was shown? You know, does part of you think they can understand maybe why initially they showed something, but then when you realize what it is, you flick away, like maybe. Like sometimes.
And did they repeatedly go to her? Like it was.
They went back to it once more, I think. Again, okay. I think it was once more, from what I recall. Like, you know, and see, so again, I don't know. Like sometimes you have this big, like, UEFA feed that is just on the whole time, you know, and the broadcasters can cut away from it or not. And they're just showing, sort of, they're pumping out footage the whole time. Because I saw someone suggesting online, I can't verify this, that Danish TV might have cut away from it quite quickly, but we're probably operating off some international feed, you know, here of some description. And again, so it's not as if BBC have the control to go back to studio, but they don't, and RTE similarly, but they don't actually have control, obviously, of the cameras and what's shown.
No.
You know, they're operating off this centralized thing. And again, because a lot of people haven't been able to send people to travel, they're possibly even more reliant on the whim of like one director and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a bit torn on it, because I think it's in, you know, I'm trying to think of the Mwamba case and others of that nature, where certainly like you would see a lot of what was going on the sideline and people's reactions and what they were saying. And You know, I suppose when Schmeichel and Kjaer went to address this person who you didn't know who it was until it became obvious who it was, again, I could sort of understand why it maybe happens once, but I can't understand really how it happens more than once, and it did happen more than once. And that would sort of be the same with the, you know, the shots. And I think I've heard you say it, like, you know, the wide angle or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was a tough one for all concerned, I would say, you know, because I think I heard you say in the paper review yesterday, or someone made the point in the paper review yesterday, like, the photos of the human wall of players and all of that is probably one of the most powerful images of the tournament. And the thing is, at these times, without being just on media defending media, it can't be that, but, like, you know, these moments of history, like, they are chronicled, as uncomfortable as it might be, by, you know, the cameras still rolling and the photographers still taking photographs sometimes.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously you apply taste in terms of what you put out and what you actually broadcast and what you send through your wires to your, you know, the various sort of, you know, like, it was a Getty image that actually cleared this up for a lot of people. Eventually, you know, they were able to clear that up because they were trying to take the picture of the stretcher coming off the pitch. That stretcher off the pitch could have revealed something completely different.
Well, that's, you know, a great point. Totally.
The lenses were trained on it in the first place,
yeah,
because that's someone's job in that place, as uncomfortable as that might be.
Yeah, they are there to document what's happening. Like, they're doing a job, you know. So
yes.
I've a lot of sympathy for all concerned. I think it must have been a shocking situation for them to find themselves in. Like, this director is getting persecuted by the world now. He was doing his best. He was not expecting to be documenting the death of a man potentially in front of him.
No.
I do think the protocol, though, on the back of this should be wide shot, because it's important to give the world a sense of what's going on, but there's no need to show legs moving or CPR being administered when potentially the loss of life is happening.
Yeah, you know,
there's just no need to get in there. But I think holding a wide shot and describing the awful scenes is legitimate, maybe, is the word. I mean, there's nothing great about it, but I think it's grim and legitimate, and it's kind of what they're there to do as well. On the match being replayed then, so it seems he was able to FaceTime his teammates from the hospital. I mean, it's amazing how quickly you recover. And on the defibrillator point, plenty of people have pointed out the importance of defibrillators. I was just reading the stats there. So if this was to happen to a person without defibrillators nearby, their chances of survival, cardiac arrest that is, are 7%. Whereas if a defibrillator is on the patient within 3 minutes, chances of survival jump from 7% up to 70%, which is obviously a colossal change in fortunes. And the team doctor, he gave a press conference afterwards alongside the team manager and talked in just very, perfunctory terms, you know, like, this is just another day at the office, about what was happening. And he was saying that basically when they arrived to Ericsson, his heart was pumping and he was breathing, but that stopped after they'd arrived, and then they put the defibrillator on him. And he said in one defib he came back, which is very good. It doesn't happen that quickly usually. So that was his version of events. So he leaves, he's conscious, he FaceTimes them, and this decision to play the match again, obviously, again, I don't know, ultimately, no harm done. Like, the players got through it and they lost the game. What's the wrong decision? What's the right decision? Who knows? But so Kasper Schmeichel's been talking to the BBC, for instance, as we understand it, and we don't fully know how it was pitched to the players, or is it one UEFA guy goes in and says it, or whether there's, like, you know, email chain with the Danish FA. It's hard to know how these things are all worked out, but the choice, it seems, was finish the game on Saturday evening or come back midday yesterday and finish it. And they obviously elected to go and play the game on Saturday evening. So here's Kasper Schmeichel. This is on the BBC website, talking about the dilemma facing the players.
I think the game was played, but I think the question is, obviously, I think a decision about the game should probably not have been made in the heat of the moment. I think it would probably have been a wise decision to maybe change the rules or the regulations in extraordinary circumstances and maybe take a breath and then reconvene the day after and make a decision on how we go forward. Listen, we haven't really got that far yet. Today is our first kind of training session today, and I think there's a lot of different, there's a lot of people who react in very different ways, and we need to try and find a way to get back to normality. But I think the real important thing for us is that we know that Christian's okay, and from there on, we've talked a lot about the spirit that we have in this team, and to be able to fight the way that we've done, that would be possible without us knowing that Christian was okay. So so for us, it's about trying to get together now and just give everything we have, give our best. If it's enough, it's enough. It's not, if not, then I mean we can look each other in the eyes, and we can honestly say that we've given and done everything that we could.
So that's Kasper Schmeichel, who, along with Simon Schär, I thought was really clued in and behaved really well in the moments after the collapse. Like, it seems the manager said he left it up to the players, the Danish manager, that is, and they very much wanted to play lesser of two evils. Like, none of them thought that they'd have a great night's sleep, I suppose, or that they'd relish playing the next day. And there was almost a degree of, let's get this over with, let's go do it, I think is the gist of what he said. I mean, I certainly don't think the players should have had the choice. I think it should have been taken out of their hands. I felt it at the time. I feel it more strongly now. And we talked to Philip O'Connor, journalist who was at the game, Irish journalist for Reuters yesterday. And, you know, he said that Simon Schär requested to come off. And that does not happen very often. He's the captain of the side. He's fit. And he was utterly drained. And we've all gone through something kind of traumatic or had a shock. And I think, you know, yourself, an hour or two afterwards, it can hit you and you are drained. You're suddenly worn out by the whole thing and the adrenaline is worn off a touch. And I suspect Schär was in that space. I think Delaney came off as well. Again, very fit player, wouldn't usually come off. I just think, in short, Dan, someone experienced and disassociated from the whole thing, not connected to the Danes, not connected to Ericsson, not Finland. So in effect, UEFA is who I'm talking about here. UEFA should have stepped in and said very simply, we're going to hit pause on this. We want you to go back to your hotels, get some food, get a shower. If you want to get some counsellors in to talk about this, do reassure yourselves even further that Christian Eriksen is doing well. Try and get a bit of sleep and come back tomorrow midday, and at least you'll be in better shape. Probably, there are no guarantees, but probably then you will be an hour and 45 of sitting around in your sweaty gear and still just shook by the whole thing and struggling to process the whole thing. And it was borne out by the fact that Schär didn't finish the game. I just thought once they left it up to the players, there'd be a degree of like wanting to step up to the plate and do it for your country and a certain pressure there. And once one or two, you know how group decision works. Once one or two say, yeah, come on, F this, let's do it, lads. Let's do it for Christian. Let's just get this over with. Quickly, those two or three decide for the group. No one is kind of going, I do feel a bit shook. Maybe we should talk about it. Not everyone gets an equal vote in that. So I just couldn't believe it went ahead. And midday the next day mightn't have been much fun either, but it would have been a damn sight better to what unfolded. It just didn't feel fair on the players at all.
Yeah, and listen, let's just remember, I mean, midday the next day was the option because of the TV schedule, ultimately. Like, you know, and this is the thing, like, I mean, I think the problem was, and I mean, I would have saw, you know, some people making the point on Saturday, maybe even Philip and a few others, well, listen, if the players are okay with this, we'll play.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was a UEFA statement put out, which almost, UEFA tweet put out, which almost made it phrased as though, like, following a request from the players. It was though, like, the players had come to them and said, we want to play. Whereas, of course, the reality is that the players would have been dealt with an inflexible list of options. And I will say, to some degree, I do actually sympathise with UEFA, in the sense that, like there, like a lot of people in UEFA now are a slave to a competition they inherited, and the format of this particular competition, where there's like traveling between countries and teams flying here, there, and everywhere, it makes it even less flexible than they normally would be, you know. But like, I really do believe, like, if it was anything other than a major tournament, the game would have been off, you know, within 10 minutes of Eriksen coming off the pitch in any shape or form.
Yeah.
I mean, the Moamba game was, for reason that was called off. I think it was 83 minutes gone in that match, but it was called off. But of course, they didn't have to play again 3 days later in the same competition on a tight TV schedule that involves everyone flying around the continent. And UEFA's entire financial plan, and the reason they were so desperate for the Euros to go ahead, is based on the incomes and the revenues from this. So that's why, like, the options that were presented, that are available to players, were so tight. Like it was in a time frame. I mean, in an ideal world, you might say, what about 7:45 tomorrow or whatever, 24 hours on. But that's because it would have been because games clashing and all sorts of issues. And
Do you know on that one for
a second? That's the reason.
I get that. But when you step back and think about that for a second, what broadcaster really would have complained under the circumstances, like under these unbelievable circumstances, which everybody has lived through? What broadcaster really would have said, actually, UEFA, this is unacceptable? I don't think it would have happened. But
I don't think so. I mean, like, could you be accused of, like, I don't know, breaking some kind of contracts and you can show all the games? I don't know. I don't know. I just the fact that it was mid-A is obviously no coincidence, really. You know what I mean? Like, it's obvious that, like, you know, a major tournament, things need to run to clockwork for UEFA. And listen, that's how they work. That's how they operate. We all enjoy this 2:05, 8:00 schedule that we have at the moment.
Yeah.
It's like it's done in a particular way for a reason, because, you know, everything is calculated from that. But that's why. But I'm just saying, like, the decisions were made to protect the tournament, as opposed to necessarily do what is best for the players. And listen, some would say, well, that's only fair enough. As I said, I do sympathise for them. It's not as if they can kick on all the games in that group by a day. You know, like, if you go too far back, the argument then would be, well, Finland are playing Russia next, but they're getting 24 hours, the preparation is skewed towards them. And all those things, once Ericsson is fine and everything is okay, then you end up in that sort of, these petty arguments over who had a better preparation for this and who was inconvenienced by that. But I'm just saying that ultimately when... Like, they kept the fans in the stadium for that length of time because they knew what they had to do. And this is big business, as someone made the point to me, a colleague made the point to me about, you know, an F1, seeing what's happened in Formula 1 in the past with some shocking crashes and episodes, and the race goes on, The race, they take their time and they have their reflection or whatever it may be, you know, and the race goes ahead, no matter what's on your mind. Maybe that's different because in that sport, you know, that's the danger every day to some degree.
And they're not teammates in the same way as this.
No, this is exactly. I know, listen, I think, like, my instinct at the time was this was a bad idea to go back and play the game. But, you know, it's not surprising that the flexibility was very limited in what was available.
Limited flexibility, but I think midday the next day is better, ultimately. I mean... That'd be my perspective. Anyway, we can go around in circles here. I understand what you're saying. I understand about TV deals and everything. But
that's
step in and say, none of you are really thinking that straight at the moment. Just go back and take your time and we'll do it tomorrow. Take it out of their hands. Because I think...
Yeah, a bit of leadership on it.
It just put a pressure on them, which, you know, added to an already grim situation, I guess.
And if Ericsson's in that position as well, of course, you can understand human nature as is for people to say, go and play the game. Yeah. Don't stop on my account. It's completely understandable why he took the decision they did. But as you said, it shouldn't have been their decision probably.
Probably not. Anyway, look, in a way, no harm done. They played the game, they lost it.
Yeah.
And it's just football. Be interesting to see where they are now for the rest of the tournament. Like, will they be shot completely or can they come back? Schmeichel said they don't really know. So I think everybody will be kind of hoping Denmark... rally, won't they? They'll be.
We're now rooting for our old friends, the Danes.
I know.
You know,
everybody's second team.
Yeah.
So that was the Ericsson situation. Thankfully, he's okay and on the mend, and hopefully, he can continue with his footballing career. They're trying to get to the bottom of what happened. We'll take a very short break. I do want to talk to you about the football of the last few days, obviously. So 70 minutes gone, nil all between Spain and Sweden. Football on Off the Ball is with Paddy Power. Save Our Game, donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Back with Dan McDonald in one sec.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Ready for your next big move? The trip from the fridge to the couch. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome, Max. Spain still in control against Sweden, 74 minutes in the clock. It's now getting to that stage of a game where all their dominance and the sense that a goal would come is probably turning into a sense of anxiety. And is this goal going to come? So Sweden now can see the end line and will dig in. So let's see what Spain can come up with. 15 minutes to go there, still nil all. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent still with us. Nathan Murphy is along for the ride. How you doing?
All right, lads.
So let's jump in on England then. I'll get the ball rolling. I made a crucial error last night. So I was in here yesterday, I was doing the show and I didn't get to watch England properly. And so I went home last night and I said, even though I've heard this wasn't a great game and I know it's 1-0, I'm going to watch the full 90 and take notes. How good can this Netherlands-Ukraine game be? I said to myself. And Julie sat through the 90 minutes of England. So I'm bloody going to talk about them now. So Pickford, Walker, Stones, Mings, Trippier caught everyone by surprise. Phillips and Rice, Sterling, Mount, Foden, Kane. I would put it to you, Nathan, this was pretty damn impressive in many ways, England. Once I knew it wasn't going to be a good game and therefore it kind of parked those expectations and just watch what they did. Really assured in possession, mixed it up really well. Like, I was kind of thinking with an Irish hat on as well. They weren't afraid to go long at times in a way sometimes we're like sticking rigidly to must pass the ball. They went long on a number of occasions and picked up second balls. And Phillips in particular caught the eye, was brilliant. Declan Rice doesn't pass the ball forward ever, but is just sitting there doing a great job. And then Mount continues to get better. Foden really good. Sterling, it's amazing. Like, so he's grabbed the headlines and 500 metres from where he grew up and stuff. I still found myself, as well as he played at times, thinking, God, I think Grealish might do a bit more there than Sterling might have done in certain instances. But he's definitely sticking with Sterling going forward. And the only other thing that jumped out is just how bad Croatia were. So, like, even for the goal, they're in this 4-1-4-1 set up, Croatia, and it's Kovacic and Modric with Borzovic sitting. And it's this, just this weird moment when you watch it, and Kovacic, for no reason, like indiscriminately, just rushes up, just decides, even though we haven't pressed England once all day, I'm gonna press, and runs off. And Phillips almost finds himself like goal side of Kovacic and thinking, this is odd, and just almost runs into the space because it's almost like the space was so open for him that he just sort of had to go into it and found himself in possession. And suddenly there's Raheem Sterling, and Borzovic hasn't noticed Sterling running through this massive gap suddenly. And there's the goal. And you're thinking that was an absolute gift on Croatia's part. So England will face tougher tests. But like, first day out in the heat, all the pressure, the booing, picking the right team. I thought, you know, that was, in fairness, pretty impressive on Southgate's part.
Yeah, you took your notes and you got them all out there, Joe, so it was well worth your while. I think Southgate basically set up with five defensive-minded players and was willing then to let the other five go, which is why you didn't see Declan Rice pass the ball forward. You rarely saw the fullbacks get forward, even when there was an opportunity, which is probably why he chose Trippier ahead of Shaw and Chilwell, that actually he was happy to keep it quite tight at the back. You rarely saw the England centre halves stepping forward. You rarely saw John Stones step forward in the way he would at Manchester City. And it was the freedom that suddenly was given to Calvin Phillips, which we've never seen at Leeds, because he plays such a specific role for Marcelo Bielsa in a 4-1-4-1, that it was a bit of a surprise to see he was the one making these marauding runs forward and finding lots of gaps. And you're right, they did play it long, particularly in the first half. They were at the most effective when they were playing balls in and down the channels. Phil Foden looked really impressive at times before fading out of it. And it was a good, solid game plan. It was probably, and maybe the heat was a factor, up until this Spain-Sweden game, arguably the dullest game of the tournament. But it felt like a very professional performance in that they were in complete control throughout the game. At Croatia, at this stage, look a bit of a spent force. Modric hasn't quite been there all season. He still does a very solid job, but they don't have Mandzukic up front anymore, and he was the absolute star quality in an attacking sense. So it doesn't look as though there'll be any sort of a factor. But I thought they did a very reasonable job. And while they may be overshadowed in this first round of games by better attacking displays, like, quite often these major tournaments are won by teams who can keep it very solid at the back, don't concede many goals. And I think England need to be very solid at the back. I think he's looked probably at Stones and Mings and realizes, as much as maybe this goes back to the Alexander-Arnold selection, as much as they would love to have Alexander-Arnold on one side and Chilwell on the other side and bombing forward like they do at their clubs, I do not have centre backs that I can trust to be in the right positions if they do that.
No.
So I'm just going to hold them all back. We are going to keep it incredibly tight. I'm going to hold Declan Rice back as well. All the improvements he's made at West Ham this season, all the aspects he's added to the game, I don't really want to see them either. I want him to be my holding guy. And then I'm going to trust that somebody in every game is going to produce a moment of magic. I would disagree on Sterling. I think, does Jack Grealish get into that position that Raheem Sterling did for the goal? Does he make that sort of run in advance?
You can't say he wouldn't. Look, Sterling had a good game, especially in the first 20 minutes. There was a really good bit of interplay, him and Mount left-hand side, and he almost got in courtesy of Kane. And they definitely have some pre-planned training moves from throw-ins, actually, because Sterling obviously set up the Foden shot off the crossbar. Trippier threw the ball. Like, Mount had just run out of the space. It just felt a bit choreographed. And there was also a volley he had over the bar from a throw-in as well, Sterling. So, look, he was busy and lively. I guess I'm a huge Grealish fan, and I really think, like, he could make hay at this tournament. There was that moment where it cut to Grealish warming up shortly before Sterling scored the goal. Like, definitely Southgate was thinking he's gone out of a bit Sterling. But look, to say he didn't have a good game is outrageously harsh. I just think God, Grealish in there.
Sterling's his guy, though. Sterling has done it from time and time again. And it's going to be more and more difficult for Grealish to get in as the tournament gets on, because Grealish has never played in games of this magnitude before, where Sterling plays in massive games consistently throughout the season where there's enormous pressure on him. So unless there's an injury, or unless there's a real dip from a Sterling, a Foden, and maybe Foden at this stage is the more likely because of his inexperience, for Grealish to get a bit of an opportunity. But they didn't set the world alight, but I don't think Southgate could have asked for any more. And suddenly he's looking at Calvin Phillips. Now he's got to back it up. Suddenly looking at Calvin Phillips thinking, God, I wasn't quite sure what I would do with Jordan Henderson out. On that performance, Henderson's going to struggle to get back in.
Yeah, he will. Yeah. On Trippier, he said, by the way, and these are the little things we don't notice, that Trippier apparently is incredibly vocal and he wanted him beside Mings. And also he said he's such a brilliant defender. Dan, Nathan made that point about, like, Trippier and, like, Walker. Walker didn't have his best game, but they didn't get past that fight. It was like Giovanni Trapattoni, Dan. It was like Ireland 2012. Those boys, that was a flat back four. And they sat there and kept it safe. And God, you wouldn't know Rice is such a brilliant all-round footballer, like, and could get forward and get behind defences if you were watching him for the first time on Sunday. So, like, for all the hype and everything, it was very nice and cautious and steady kind of approach on Southgate's part. What did you make of them?
Yeah, no, I should say about the Spain-Sweden game. Sweden did miss an absolute sitter. We didn't reference it. Marcus Berg missed an absolute sitter around 10 minutes ago when Sweden were on the break. So it hasn't been all one-way traffic, but that's just a by-the-by. I don't know. I'm not sure if I was madly impressed by England, but completely understand why it was a great start for them. And the nature of this tournament now is, like, you win your first game, you're basically through almost, you know, and, like, you can sort of ease yourself into the competition from that point onwards. I know what you're saying, like, Rice was very conservative in how he played.
It's not even a massive criticism, it's almost just an observation. It was so striking.
I think it was a tactic, to be honest. Like, people sort of thought that Rice and Phillips, you know, it was Rice very much dropping deep and, you know, Phillips was being encouraged, as we saw, for the goal. But I just don't know about England. Like, they started very well, and then there was, like, a sort of a 20-minute spell before half-time where it wasn't so good. And even, ironically, after half-time until they scored, it wasn't great at the start of the second half. And I just sort of think that, like, if you think even back to 2018 against Croatia, the semi-final, they started really well, and then Croatia sort of got control of the game. And I just don't know if against a really good team, if they can afford to necessarily have that drop-off, which they seem to have sometimes. And I still wonder, it's interesting the way Nathan talks about Grealish there, where he might come in. Like, I still wonder, would we see Grealish play centrally at some stage in this tournament, depending on the game, you know, and depending on the situation. And I just think that England and knockout play is going to be very interesting compared to how we see them in the groups, because it's actually so long since they've won a knockout game of any real, like, great substance. Like, you know, their run in Russia, you know, was, you know, penalties against Colombia and a poor Swedish side when they got there. I just don't know. I just think, like, there's still a possibility that some teams that could play in the round of 16 might just be able to punish them for the spells that they have. I don't know. I thought they were getting a small bit frustrated. The crowd were getting a small bit frustrated for a spell. Listen, then they scored. And maybe it's nitpicking. And to be fair, they were very comfortable in seeing the game out. And that is an ageing Croatia side, as we touched on. So I don't know. I just feel like I want to see more from them to be 100% convinced.
No, I agree with that. They didn't create loads.
All that. Harry Kane's performance has been analysed a lot as well, too. There was just a flatness to parts of their play, you know, but they did enough. But what's beating Croatia at the moment? Like, is that, what's that form like in sort of racing parlance, you know? Yeah.
Friday might be more interesting, actually, against Scotland, even though, you know, Scotland have been beaten, because Scotland are so open. So, like, today we saw what Scotland have become, where it was hell for leather for the full 90 minutes, and they created half a dozen really good chances, but gave up just as many opportunities. Right. And if they play like that against England, suddenly is there an opportunity then for England to kick on, to get those attacking players more on the ball, to create more chances? Because it was pedestrian at times. It was professional. They got the job done. But like Dan said, right, at some stage, you need the X factor. You need those front four or five to really grab a game by the scruff of the neck. And I think some of the analysis of Kane has been over the top. Ironically, a lot of it was following, the conversations around Alan Shearer and how long he'd gone without a goal against Switzerland. Harry Kane had a bit of an off day. Maybe there are questions, has he changed his game too much, that he's dropping too deep and isn't in the positions. You would expect that Harry Kane will deliver at some stage during this tournament. But I think against Croatia, first day out, boiling hot day, England will be pretty pleased with that. The only thing that, to contradict myself, I said, teams win tournaments playing like that. Look back at Portugal, what they did. But this tournament hasn't started like a lot of those recent tournaments. Like, there's been a lot of good quality attacking play, actually. Teams are playing more what we've seen from club football. They are getting men forward. They're creating a lot of opportunities. So maybe it is a different type of tournament, and those teams that are playing a riskier, more attacking style of play will be rewarded.
Mm. On Kane, so the Euro 2020 show, 11 a.m. on your social channels on the OTB Sports app every weekday morning. So Tony Cascarino, John Aldridge were on this morning, and here's Aldridge on Kane, seeing as you mentioned Kane.
The one mistake for me, and Tony, he tipped on it there. Harry, if England are going to go far in the championship and win it, Harry Kane doesn't want to be that deep. He can't be on the halfway line. And then you've got two wingers at the pace of what they've got to get into the box and get on the end of things. Yeah, you come off. You come into areas where you can mix it up and play off and go in behind. But he's coming far too deep. If England win it, he's got to be top scorer or near enough top scorer of the tournament. It would depend a lot on him, on his goals. They got the 3 points, which is the most important thing. 1-0, 2-0, doesn't matter. Get the first game over, get the 3 points in the bag and move on. But Croatia showed that, at the back, England, you can get at England. A better team with the quality, and all due respects to Croatia, will make England pay for any slight mistakes that they made. They made slight mistakes yesterday, but Croatia didn't make them pay. So I think, whatever he does in whichever way has got to accommodate Harry Kane scoring goals.
So that was John Aldridge. Tony Cascarino was on as well. The lads back tomorrow morning. So, clock against us. Most impressive performance or team thus far? We're still awaiting, obviously, quite a few teams, not least France-Germany tomorrow. Dan, do you want to go first? Who grabbed you the most?
I feel like I'm slagging now because I'm trying to think where the Italians were still up there in terms of that after our discussion earlier. I don't think any team has really grabbed me and they said they were excellently good. I mean, I think, listen, I do have a liking for Belgium for the whole competition overall, I have to say. I wouldn't say that the performance the other night was this is sensational, but I suppose maybe my view on that is sort of, I'm not changing that opinion. I guess that I think Belgium could go very far in the competition because they've gotten so much to come back in potentially, and that's the thing. So I still think, but that, I think, there is a half of the draw that's stacked, and if they win their group, they might end up in that. So that's the only caveat to that.
Yeah. Nathan, who grabbed you?
Probably too much of a consensus this evening. Like Belgium, it was quite easy for them as expected against Russia. Lukaku was in devastating form. Tielemans, I thought, was brilliant again in the middle of midfield, just kept it ticking over for them. And they've brilliant strength and depth. Like you look at Castagne goes off and I think he's out of the tournament, broke his cheekbone. And Thomas Meunier comes on and is arguably even better. And they still have Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne to come back. If they can get De Bruyne back at full fitness, it's going to be very difficult of the teams we've seen so far for any of them to beat them. But the Netherlands were a bit of a surprise last night as to how good they were as an attacking side. But what they showed defensively, I think when it comes to the knockout stages, they'll probably struggle. Mm. But I think it's been a good opening weekend. There's been a lot of really good, entertaining games at Scotland. The match today, as I mentioned, was a cracking game to watch, and they were beaten by one of the great European Championship goals from the halfway line. But they were very unlucky at the same time. At this game, if this was the Republic of Ireland playing Spain, we would probably be thinking this is a Trapattoni-style performance from Sweden. Yeah. Just stuck back, let Spain have the ball, and Spain just don't have anybody up front, unfortunately, at the moment. Morata, two or three chances in the first half, and they lack that little killer instinct at the moment.
Yeah, it did look like they were going to win this well, and Murata had that great chance. If that goes in, it's a different game. But now Sweden, as I said, even 20 minutes ago, they can see the end line in sight, and they're digging in, and they've got their shape and they're comfortable. And I guess that was always the worry with Spain, that they'd just be a bit nice without being devastating. And they're certainly not devastating tonight, Nathan.
They're not. There was a statistic at halftime where they said it was a European Championship record for most passes by a team and a half. I presumed they were going to say, brilliant.
They should have scored there.
The keeper should have scored. It was a header from 5 yards out that keeper saved with his feet. Really should have scored. I assumed the next line to that stat of most pass and a half was since Spain beat Ireland at Euro 2012. Hmm. But in fact, more even than that, in the history of the European Championship since they started keeping stats, that's the dominance. But they need to find, like, Morata, it feels as though he needs 3-4 chances in every game. I watched their final warm-up match against Portugal and it was the exact same situation.
Okay, fellas, we're heating up nicely. Thanks very much. Nathan, thanks for jumping on.
No bother, lads.
Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Cheers, Dan.
Thanks, lads.
So into out of time now, 4 minutes to go. Spain nil, Sweden nil.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Ready for your next big move? The trip from the fridge to the couch. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.